Nicholas Lee. I'm from Kuala Lumpur, born and bred. I lived in Canada for a couple of years when I was younger. I've always had quite a privileged childhood. You know, my parents sent me to international school all the way through to the time when I went to Taylor's College. I was at Taylor's for 2 years and fortunate enough to have gone to Oxford University. I graduated with a degree, second upper in politics, philosophy, and economics. Worked in London for 2 years and then moved over to Hong Kong where I worked for a further 3 years, all in investment banking, and also up to Beijing to learn some Mandarin. Up until then, very fortunate life, you know, good education, good parents, also a, you know, the privilege of working overseas. So, you know, what were my religious practices up until then? My family was actually, I guess, kind of Malaysian style Buddhism, where you go to, you know, you go to the temple a couple times a year. You, you know, you ching in front of any Buddha deities, and you know that was, you know, the majority of my practice up until then. At that age, when I first took it up, I was quite religious. I would come back every day in front of our guanyin, which we had. We had a small guanyin at home, and I would pray every day in front of that guanyin, you know, reciting Dai Bei Zhao. So, but at the same time, I was religious, but at the same time, you could also say, you know, lacking guidance, because I didn't really have a guru or someone to actually guide me in my religious practice. So, once I started work, though, I slowly found my touch with Buddhism fading. You know, when I would pray once a day before starting work, once I started work, because of work pressure, because of the fact of, you know, living in these fast-paced cities where, you know, you go out, you have a good time with all your friends, and you don't actually think about the, you know, possible consequences, and you don't actually follow up on your religion, I found myself praying less and less and less, up until the point of when I left Hong Kong in at the end of 2008, I pretty much wasn't praying at all. You know, back then, by then it was just pretty much going and you know, just, you know, maybe one prostration in front of the statues, and then that was it. That was all my praying. So that kind of continued on up until 2000, you know, sometime last year, when I came back. I remember quite distinctly, I came back during Wesak Day, and I came to Kachara House for Wesak Day. So my parents had been going to Kachara House for almost a full year up until then. They had been following Rinpoche even to Nepal, where they went on the pilgrimage. And they'd always wanted me to meet with Rinpoche, but for some reason or the other, Rinpoche would always decline their requests whenever I would, or my parents would ask me to meet up with Rinpoche. So back then I would think, you know, if he doesn't want to meet me, I don't want to meet with him too. So that was just my way of thinking, which is actually, I know, very wrong. But back then, you know, that was how I would think. Towards the end of 2008, my parents had actually started coming to the Setrap Pujas. They'd been involved with Kachara House and had known about it for about 6 months up until then. And they invited home Lama Tsongkhapa, a 5-foot Lama Tsongkhapa, along with a, you know, gold statue like a gold plaque of Setrap around that big. So they had been coming every Monday for the English Setrap Pujas. And, you know, every now and then I would follow them and come for the Setrap Pujas as well. So when I first saw Setrap, I was wondering, why is he so fierce? You know, back then my conception of Buddhist deities was of, you know, always very peaceful in monk's robes and, you know, always smiling. So it was quite shocking to see a fierce deity, and I didn't know why. So what I did was I actually asked some of the more senior members of Kachara. I asked Ms. Seng Yao, I asked JP, who, and they you know, responded and told me why Sechup was so fierce. One thing that I found comforting, even though Sechup was so fierce, is that he's an emanation of Amitabha. So during Wesak Day of last year, I came back. I was, you know, through my travels, I came back through Malaysia for a little bit and went to listen to Rinpoche. And that was the first time I ever listened to Rinpoche. When I was listening to Rinpoche, you know, I was listening half-heartedly. I was sitting around, you know, almost falling asleep, up until JP, who's one of Rinpoche's liaisons, came up to me and gave me a little mug and says, Rinpoche wants you to have this. So I suddenly perked up because I suddenly thought, oh, someone's actually watching that. I wasn't paying attention. So after the talk, I went to JP, you know, thanked him for the mug, and then asked him what I should do with it. So he said, you know, this has been blessed by Rinpoche, and you should be, every time you drink water, you should drink from this mug. So I said, okay, fine, you know, I'll believe that. So I took the mug, went back to Beijing, which was where I was at the time, and would always drink from it. So, I mean, I didn't notice anything happen immediately, but slowly what I found happened was that I started becoming more and more curious. I took back a little mini prayer book, the little purple prayer book, to Beijing, and I would actually do some prayers. You know, I started praying a little bit to Sechup myself. So this tied in with the rest of the prayers wherein I would pray to Tsongkhapa and Sechup and follow the pujas, and I would do this about 3 times a week. Well, I actually didn't notice anything at first, but what I found was that growingly I would pray more and more. So, you know, when I went back to Beijing this year in February, you know, I still had never officially met Rinpoche. I'd only been for that one Wesak day. And I started thinking maybe I wanted to take refuge because my parents had taken refuge Wesak day of last year. And I started thinking that I wanted to take refuge too, but I was wondering when would I be able, you know, to have that opportunity. So I was up in Beijing, and I went to the Lama Tsongkhapa, I went to the Yonghekong Temple, which is a Tibetan Buddhist temple, also Yellow Hat, and there's a big Lama Tsongkhapa there. So I prayed to Lama Tsongkhapa, please give me guidance. You know, I'm not really sure what I want to do with my career. I'm not really sure, you know, where I'm supposed to be, so give me some guidance. So that was on a Thursday. So I had planned to go skiing that that Saturday and Sunday, just for the weekend. I've been skiing a long time, ever since I was 5 years old, every year since I was five. So I'm a pretty experienced skier. I went skiing in Beijing, just about 2 to 3 hours outside of Beijing. And on my first run, you know, this is just, you know, we got on the slopes at 1 o'clock, at about 1:30. I was just going down just like I normally do. And then suddenly my left ski just popped out just as I was turning right. So that caused me to spin. So I'm kind of leaning back and I can see the sky, and I'm spinning right. So I'm spinning and spinning out of control into the trees, because I can see from the corner of my eyes the trees. So I was spinning into the trees. To my left, I spun past a snow cannon, which is, you know, made of metal, and if I hit that, I probably would have died. So I spun right past that into the trees. I hit one tree and then bounced off another tree. So after hitting the first tree, I was like, my first thought was, oh man, I'm screwed. This is gonna be really bad. And then I quickly thought of Sechup, please help me, you know, please help me so this is not gonna be so bad. So I hit one tree, bounced off that tree, hit another tree. So I felt fine, you know, I felt no pain. I tried to get up and I couldn't get up. So I waited for ski patrol to come. When they came, they took me down and then took me to the hospital. So they x-rayed my knee and said, oh, your knee is fine, it's not broken, but you still need to check for any ligament damage. And if I had hit my back, definitely would have been paralyzed. If I had hit my head, you know, at least a concussion, if not worse. So definitely it was a lot, it could have been a lot worse than it actually was. I think that without Setrap's blessing, you know, at that stage, it's kind of a 50-50. So I think with Setrap's blessing, it kind of weighed things to my favor. I went back to Beijing, couldn't walk at this time. I was on crutches. I went back to Beijing, and then they told me I needed surgery. So my insurance advised that I come back to Malaysia to do surgery. So I came back to, I took like almost the next flight back to Malaysia. That's about 3 days after that, back to Malaysia. And I was saw a lot of doctors, and I had scheduled to see a specialist. It was Dr. Saul here in Malaysia, and was supposed to operate on a Tuesday. So I came for the Monday puja. I came for the Setrap puja on Monday, and now I'm a firm believer in Setrap. Right? So came for the Monday puja. I prayed, and then it just so happened that that was the day that Rinpoche wanted everybody to go to the Ledrang. And we were all sitting around after offering to the Katas, because Rinpoche was going to give a talk. So I was sitting around, and Rinpoche, you know, gave his talk on what it means to have a blessing. So what it means to have a blessing is to be exposed to the Dharma. So what happened then was Rinpoche went around and he blessed groups, you know, who there was basically 80 people there, and he blessed people in, you know, each of the people. He didn't have time to bless everybody, but he blessed one person in each group, and there's probably about five people that got blessed. So I was one of the people that got blessed. He actually had the mandala and actually blessed me with that. After that, Rinpoche also pointed out a few people who would get pendants, and I was one of the few people who managed to get a Lama Tsongkhapa pendant. So right, you know, at that time, I'm feeling very confident because my surgery is in the morning, and I've just been blessed by Rinpoche. You know, I've actually never really met Rinpoche before, and I had the chance to meet him. After the surgery, I had physiotherapy every day, and initially it was on two crutches, and you know, right now it's been probably 2.5 months after the surgery, and I'm basically going to walk. So life has kind of returned to normal for me. And actually, during that night that we all went to the Ledrang, those who hadn't taken refuge had the option of taking refuge. So I took refuge that night. I wouldn't have had all that happen to me if it wasn't for the accident. So in that way, I understand now that that in itself is actually a blessing, because my body's fine after that. I've had the chance to further my Buddhist faith by coming back to Malaysia, and I think a lot of it is actually to do with Setrap. It's very easy when you're working in a busy job, you know, only thinking about yourself. You know, you work hard, you play hard. You know, you hear that all the time. You hear that in the press, you hear that from other people, you know, you hear it from celebrities. Everyone says that work hard, play hard. Work hard and playing hard is all good, but the thing is, what I've learned now is that when you do that, and only that, you're actually running down your merits. Where do you get these merits from? These merits come from a previous life, or in this life when you've done good. So if you only do hedonistic things and run down those merits at a time, you know, at some point, all that is going to go, and all you're going to have is, you know, all your negative karma coming out. So in order to purify, you know, whatever bad that you have done either in this life or in past lives, it's important to have the right motivation to do the right thing. And I think religion, whether you're Buddhist, whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, is important, because the principles in which these religions are founded are pure. Why there is actually you know, a lot of bickering between religions is because of people's interpretation of it. But fundamentally, they are pure. And if you follow whatever religion, whether you're Buddhist or you're Christian, you know, it will lead you towards a more virtuous life, and you can rebuild those merits by helping others and thinking of others. And I think that's what religion actually does for you. I'm of the belief that it's very important for people to find their own path. You need to build your knowledge, and I think the best way to do that is actually, if you are in KL, to come to Kuchara House and, you know, come for some of the pujas where there are senior members of Kuchara House, in attendance, and ask them questions. Ask anything that might pop into your head. Another good way, I think, for people that don't live in KL is actually to go and watch the YouTube videos, because Rinpoche has 200 plus YouTube videos, and on topics which, you know, you could think of, you know, all the way from, you know, what mala should I use, to who is Setrap. I think there's a big series on who is Setrap. I think everyone should watch that. The other way of staying in touch, I think, is to follow the Semtoku website as well as the Twitter. Rinpoche actually blogs pretty much every day, sometimes twice a day. So it's a great way of staying in touch with the people at Kuchara, finding out more about what it means to be Buddhist, because now I've understood what it really means to be Buddhist, and really the transformation is in yourself. But there are people that can help you and guide you on this path, so you're not alone on this path. And I think if you have the right motivation, things will fall into place. So your worldly obstacles will be cleared, and you know, you will be able to further that, further your Buddhist path, you know, towards enlightenment. I think it's also important for people to know that, you know, if you only think about yourself, no good can really come of it. The only way to lead a more virtuous life is to actually think of others. And, you know, I hope that I'll be able to help people that are really in need. And you know, in itself, by thinking of others and helping other people, I can help myself as well. You know, even though, you know, so that actually all ties in together. So it actually teaches, I think religion teaches you a really good way of how to lead your life and a more balanced life.